Yes, indeed, my friends. You are listening to Health Conspiracy Radio. I am your host, Nick Brannigan. I am broadcasting live from my Blog Talk Radio channel, blogtalkradio.com/HCRadio. You can also hear this on iTunes and healthconspiracy.com, because you're probably not listening to this live, because only crazy people that live in Las Vegas wake up at 5 a.m. to do a radio show. But hey, it is what it is. Today we're going to talk about I'm going to do some extensive coverage on the Disneyland measles outbreak. I got about 5 or 6 articles I'm going to cover on that. Then, pending time, briefly cover an article about GMOs, a way to make them safer. Is it eradicating them? Because that would be a good start. And then bowel movements and your health. How to look at your poo and tell if you're healthy or not. I don't like that word, the P word. It's nasty. Health Conspiracy Radio is brought to you by LasVegasHomeopathy.com. Visit my friends, my friend Dr. Somia Schreeder at LasVegasHomeopathy.com. Also, she was on episode 2 of Health Conspiracy TV. So go to healthconspiracy.com. Links to the YouTube channel are up there. Just scroll down a little bit. You'll see a Health Conspiracy Radio episode 2. I'll be putting a link into the category bar soon. But you can watch the full video. Excuse me, the full video of that. And if you don't have time to sit down and watch the video, today on naturalnewsradio.com, that interview is re-airing along with an article that I cover, talking about 9 reasons you may be unhappy. A little self-help, self-realization in that episode. Also, please check out my friends at Vegas Valley Organics, getveggies.com. If you live in the Las Vegas Valley area, they are on the corner of Eastern and Pebble, or in the shopping center in Eastern and Pebble, the Regal Cinema Shopping Center. So check them out, getveggies.com. Get access to the only certified organic CSA program in Las Vegas. Stay tuned. Health Conspiracy Radio starts now.
Is there a health conspiracy? You can bet your bottom dollar. Genetically modified food, poison in your tap water, toxic, tainted, and abused meat and dairy, ingredients of mass destruction, poisonous pesticides and herbicides, deep psychological propaganda, food that makes your children go crazy. Do you think the FDA is meant to protect you? And just what in the world are they spraying in the skies? You have been a victim of mass programming, but it's never too late. Learn how to successfully make changes that last, leading you to a new life of health and vibrancy that most will never experience. Over the next hour, allow Nick Brannigan to share with you his research, expertise, and life experience. This is Health Conspiracy Radio.
I just sent a tweet promoting the fact that I'm live on air, and I forgot to put a space in between of and Disneyland. So the trolls are going to get me for that one. If you want to follow me on Twitter, its handle is Nick Brannigan. Twitter.com/Nick Brannigan. Facebook.com/Nick Brannigan1. Stay up to date if you like. If you have questions, you can always email radio@healthconspiracy.com, and I will get to your question and answer it to the best of my capability. First of all, I want to get into this great article. Very, very good investigative journalism from Mike Adams from naturalnews.com, titled "Afraid of the Disneyland Measles Outbreak? Don't be fooled by Mickey Mouse science. Read this first." The Disneyland measles outbreak has America in a panic. A fact that's totally out of proportion to reality, given that so far only 644 people have even caught the measles across the country during the entire year of 2014 versus the 100,000 Americans who die every year from the side effects of prescription medications. The Disneyland outbreak at last count was just 39 people. Nevertheless, lots of people are asking the question, should I get my children vaccinated against the measles? I'm going to try to give you the most rational answer here, regardless of whether you're pro-vaccine or opposed to vaccines on principle. But first, realize that one-dimensional advice from the conventional media and health authorities is stupidly incomplete. Everybody get vaccinated. Let me read that again. But first, realize the one-dimensional advice from the conventional media and health authorities is stupidly incomplete, and that is everybody get vaccinated. Can measles vaccine work to protect against measles? Absolutely, they can in some people, but they are not without their own risk, and as you'll see below, despite the way I've been deliberately mischaracterized by others, I'm not opposed to the theory of immunization. In fact, I am the author of Blueprint for Safer Vaccines, which argues that creation of clean vaccines formulated without toxic ingredients used today, such as mercury, MSG, aluminum, formaldehyde, all of which the CDC openly admits are still used in vaccines today. Read the vaccine insert and you'll be shocked about what the science really says. The vaccine industry, along with the mainstream media, dishonestly positions vaccines as offering 100% protection with 0% risk. That's a lie. My job is to help you navigate the health propaganda so that you can make an informed decision about the possible risk and versus the possible benefits. The most important thing you can do when considering any vaccine is to read the vaccine insert. You'd be astonished to learn what's printed on the vaccine insert because it's totally different from what the media tells you about vaccines. Never allow your children to be injected with a vaccine without requesting the vaccine insert, which must be provided to patients by law. And bring a magnifying glass because the insert is written in very small text, probably to make it unreadable. I collect vaccine inserts in an effort to document the history of medicine, and although I don't yet have a measles vaccine insert, I do have one for a very popular and widely used chickenpox vaccine. Discover what the chickenpox vaccine insert really says. Take a look at what you'll find in the ViraVax chickenpox vaccine inserts so that you can look for similar things on the measles vaccine insert. Most vaccines inserts have tearaway portion to be handed to the patient. Of course, there's only one tearaway portion, even though most vaccines come in vials that contain 10 doses. Obviously, you can't hand the same tearaway sheet to 10 people, which is part of the reason why nearly everyone who gets a vaccine never sees the vaccine insert. If anybody in the media ever uttered this, they would be immediately labeled as an anti-vaxxer, which is such a dumb statement. I don't get it. He's anti-vaxxer. No, I'm just pro knowing what the F you're putting in your body, dude. How about that? But the ViraVax vaccine openly states it doesn't protect everybody from chickenpox. It also admits the vaccine doesn't treat the infection once you already have it. Where's the science behind the vaccine? In nearly microscopic small text, this vaccine insert admits no placebo control study was carried out with the ViraVax using the current vaccine. And once I had the link to this article up, if you don't want to wait, just go to naturalnews.com and type in measles outbreak Disneyland vaccine inserts. Pictures of this vaccine insert are on here and available for you to read yourself. Here's something the mainstream media never tells you and most vaccine pushers never admit. The chickenpox vaccine can cause the spread of chickenpox. It's admitted right in the insert. The next block of microscopic text in the vaccine insert warns that the vaccine should never be given to pregnant women. Is this the vaccine? Is this vaccine still given to pregnant women anyway? Of course it is. In fact, vaccine pushers are now targeting pregnant women for all sorts of vaccines which can cause spontaneous abortions. Adverse effects of the vaccine must be listed. Every vaccine insert must list the adverse effects, negative side effects, which have been reported in clinical trials following vaccination. For the ViraVax insert, some of the adverse effects listed right in the insert include nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, Guillain-Barré syndrome, Bell's palsy, non-cerebral seizure, paresthesia, and many more. Even though these are printed right in the vaccine insert, Any person who dares mention these adverse effects publicly is aggressively condemned as being anti-science. Yet the science, irrefutable documents the fact that the vaccines cause these things. The science, in other words, has already established that vaccines can cause severe neurological disorders. The next warning on Varivax comes from an admission that if the vaccine is given to people who have weak immune systems, it may cause them serious disease. The vaccine may actually spread the disease it claims to prevent. In many vaccine inserts, you'll find a warning that admits a person who receives the vaccine can then go on to spread the disease they were just vaccinated against. The vaccine itself, in other words, can sometimes spread the disease, as printed in the Varivax insert. Post-marketing evidence experience suggests that the transmission of the vaccine virus may occur rarely between healthy individuals who develop a varicella-like rash and healthy, susceptible contacts. This is an admission that the chickenpox vaccines can infect a person with chickenpox who can then spread it to someone else. Check the ingredients. Do they include MSG and toxic metals? Many vaccines are made with monosodium glutamate, the excitotoxin taste-enhancing chemical that destroys brain cells. It's also common to find vaccines formulated with mercury and aluminum. For example, this Varivax insert openly states the vaccine is manufactured with sucrose, hydrolyzed gelatin, sodium chloride, monosodium glutamate, sodium phosphate, potassium chloride, neomycin, an antibiotic, EDTA, and fetal bovine serum. Let's stop there. Fetal bovine serum. So if you're vegan, but you're an unhealthy vegan, and you get your vaccine because you think that's what you need to do, you know, hydrolyzed gelatin right there, that comes from the product of animals. But hey, what is fetal bovine serum? See what Wikipedia has to say. Fetal bovine serum is fetal calf serum, or fetal calf serum is the blood fraction remaining after the natural coagulation of blood, followed by the centrifugation to remove any remaining red blood cells. The fetal bovine serum comes from the blood drawn from a bovine fetus via a closed system of collection at the slaughterhouse. Fetal bovine serum is the most widely used serum supplement in the vitro cell culture of eukaryotic cells. This is due to having a very low level of antibodies and containing more growth factors, allowing for versatility in many different cell culture applications. The global protein bovine serum albumin is a major component of fetal bovine serum. This rich variety of proteins in fetal bovine serum maintains culture cells in a medium in which they can survive, grow, and divide. So I'm curious, is this in the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine? See if this comes up. Looks like it sure is. So here, Merck.com, MMR2. An 11-page PDF. Let's see what the ingredients there are. The growth medium for measles and mumps is medium 199, a buffered salt solution containing vitamins and amino acids and supplemented with fetal bovine serum containing SPGA, sucrose, phosphate, glutamate, and recumbent human albumin. What's recumbent human albumin now? We're going to look this guy up. Appreciate your patience while I do some start page looking. Recumbent human albumin, human protein, DNA, and vaccines. Let's see. What vaccines contain human protein and DNA? Where are they getting this from? genetically engineered human albumin, and the MMR2 vaccine. What the heck? So I'm at vaccine-tlc.org. It's a little article here on human protein DNA and vaccines. This here says, is this safe? A recent CBS News investigation article, a former senior scientist at the pharmaceutical firm who discusses the increase in autism incidence corresponding with the induction of human DNA to MMR vaccine, it suggested two could be linked. He also says that additional increased spike in autism occurred in 1995 when chickenpox vaccine was grown in human fetal tissue. This is crazy. Who are these people saying, let's take aborted fetus tissue and grow vaccines in them? All right, so that's important to know, man. Vegan or not, do you want fetal bovine serum and human DNA inserted into you or your child? Is that not crazy? So getting back to the article, here's a warning not to take aspirin after being vaccinated, along with yet another warning that taking the vaccine can cause you to spread chickenpox to someone else. It states in plain black and white, it is rare but possible that once you have the vaccine, you could spread the chickenpox virus to others. Let's see, are your doctors telling you this before you get your vaccine, people? Are they saying don't take aspirin? Don't go around people with a weak immune systems for 6 weeks. Are they telling you this? No, they're not telling you this because they don't even know, because they probably don't read the inserts, because most of them, and excuse my language, are whores to the vaccine and pharmaceutical industry. Whores. And I'm quite serious when I say that. And this portion of the vaccine inserts admits the chickenpox vaccine can give you shingles. Another additional side effects are disclosed here, and they include severe skin disorders, swelling of the brain, seizures, inflammation of the lungs, and so on and so on. Have you read the measles vaccine insert? Well, it's available in PDF. Again, that quick search for recombinant human albumin, fetal bovine serum, MMR, takes you right to the Merck's PDF website. It comes up. It's 11 pages long. Let me just double check, see if this is the actual insert. I don't know if this is the actual insert, but it's a description of it looks like it is. Precautions, warnings, all this stuff. It's very long. Most people aren't going to read 11 pages. They're just going to going to listen to the doctor and take their shot like a good little citizen. As you can see from the insert photo shown above, vaccines say all sorts of fascinating things on their legally required insert sheets that the media won't dare tell you. In fact, vaccine pushers hope that you never read the insert because they want to keep you in the dark about the side effects and toxic ingredients used in vaccines. They also want you to be completely unaware that many vaccines can actually spread the disease they claim to prevent. Many measles outbreaks, it turns out, occur largely among children who are vaccinated against the measles. These are the truths about vaccines they don't want you to know. Rather than have the public be informed, they prefer to slap you in the face with twisted claims of science combined with condemnation, intimidation, and censorship of anyone who actually tries to point out what the vaccine insert says in black and white. Yes, reading the vaccine insert in public is enough to have you condemned by vaccine pushers, even though what you are reading is documented by the vaccine manufacturers themselves. Welcome to Crazy Town Mainstream Media. That was my two cents, not the author's. Truly, the vaccine industry today is so corrupt and dangerous that it goes to great lengths to make sure no one reads the information on the insert. Just like the biotech industry, the vaccine industry goes to great lengths to make sure consumers have no idea what they are being injected with or swallowing. So if you're thinking about getting your child vaccinated against measles because of the Disneyland scare, I encourage you to bring a magnifying glass and go visit a pharmacy or doctor and ask them for the measles vaccine insert. If you read it, you're perfectly happy with all the ingredients, side effects, and risk associated with the vaccine, then make whatever choice you want, knowing that you've at least conducted some due diligence rather than blindly injecting your child with toxic chemicals the same way all the obedient sheep will do. Personally, I think injecting children with MSG, formaldehyde, mercury, and aluminum is nothing more than medical child abuse. As it turns out, many millions of people in America agree with this assessment. In fact, until the vaccine industry cleans up its act and removes the toxic ingredients from vaccines, vaccine compliance will never be high among the informed. Great article, great analysis by Mike Adams. Let's see. I got about six articles regarding this issue. I don't think we'll get to them all, but it's worth really digging into this topic because if you type in measles Disneyland, it's a ton of fear mongering by these mainstream media outlets. Who, unfortunately, most of them are in bed with the vaccine industry and the pharmaceutical industry. So let's check this one out. I got a couple articles up from Mercola.com. Now this one looks like it was up. All right, this one is from June of 2014. So about 6 months ago, 6.5 months ago. No, 6 months. Or 7 months, whatever. Outspoken vaccine advocate states measles vaccines can't prevent measles outbreaks. Again, that's advocate of vaccines, not someone who's against them, someone who's for them. If you read the official vaccination guidelines from the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, you'll be told that the vaccination is one of the best ways to protect your children and yourself against vaccine-preventable diseases. You'll also be informed that vaccines are safe, proven choice, with serious side effects occurring only very rarely. Discomfort or tenderness at the injection site is reported to be the primary risk of vaccines, while the CDC also states nearly all children can be safely vaccinated, and when vaccination rates drop in a community, it's not uncommon to have an outbreak. It's information that would send most parents right to the pediatrician for their child's next vaccination. Unless they had researched diseases and the vaccines independently. You see, the problem with the CDC's and most other public health agencies' information is that it is highly biased and frequently misleading. It doesn't give you the whole story. If you're a parent considering vaccination for your children or an adult considering vaccination for yourself, you need to know there are risks involved that your physician probably hasn't told you about. And some vaccines are not nearly as effective as they're made out to be. It's a matter of informed consent. You deserve to know everything about any medical procedure before you consent to it, and there are risks associated with every medical procedure or pharmaceutical product, including vaccines. Unfortunately, you won't get the full truth unless you search beyond information published by the CDC and other groups that aggressively promote vaccinations. Leading vaccine researcher and mandatory vaccination proponent says measles vaccines can prevent outbreaks. In the medical journal Vaccine, Dr. Poland, the journal's editor-in-chief, professor of medicine and founder and leader of the Mayo Clinic's vaccine research group, recently made surprising public statements about the poor effectiveness of measles vaccines in the MMRI shot. For many years, Dr. Poland has been a strong mandatory vaccination proponent and criticized MMR vaccine safety critics, but now he is taking the lead in publicly criticizing the vaccine's failure to prevent measles. Public health agencies have been reporting measles outbreaks in the U.S. for the past few years, which they often blame on unvaccinated individuals, despite the fact that in 2012, 95% of children entering kindergarten had gotten two MMR shots and so had more than 90% of high school students. With this high degree of compliance with the supposedly effective measles vaccines, Many people have been wondering why the U.S. is seeing a resurgence of measles cases. From January 1st to January 6, 2014, the CDC reported 397 cases of measles and 16 outbreaks in the U.S. For starters, it's important to remember that, like B. pertussis, whooping cough, and other infectious diseases, measles has a natural cyclical increases and decreases every few years in populations. These may occur even in highly vaccinated populations because the vaccine itself is not a guarantee of long-lasting immunity, and even two doses of MMR vaccine can fail to protect. According to Dr. Poland, who is conducting research at the Mayo Clinic to develop new measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines, the immune response to measles vaccines varies substantially in actual field use. Multiple studies demonstrate that 2 to 10% of those immunized with two doses of measles vaccine fail to develop protective antibody levels, and that immunity can wane over time and result in infection, so-called secondary vaccine failure, when the individual is exposed to measles. For example, during 1989 to 1991, U.S. measles outbreaks, 20 to 40% of the individuals affected had been previously immunized with 1 to 2 doses of vaccines. In October 2011, outbreak in Canada, over 50% of the 90 individuals had received 2 doses of the measles vaccines. I'm going to read that one again. Over 50% of the 98 individuals had received 2 doses of measles vaccines. This phenomenon continues to play a role in measles outbreaks. Thus, measles outbreaks also occur even among highly vaccinated populations because of the primary and secondary vaccine failure, which results in gradually larger pools of susceptible persons and outbreaks once measles is introduced. This leads to a paradoxical situation whereby measles in highly immunized societies occur primarily among those immunized. Global eradication of measles with MMR vaccine unlikely. If you're surprised that the measles-containing MMR shot has such a high rate of failure, don't be. Most Americans born in 1957 experienced measles and have naturally acquired immunity, which allowed women to pass antibodies on to their babies to protect them from measles during the first year of life. These things definitely changed in the past 60 years. Because vaccine antibodies are different from natural acquired measles antibodies, young vaccinated moms today cannot give longer-lasting natural acquired measles antibodies to their newborns. Vaccines simply do not confer the same kind of long-lasting immunity that is obtained from experiencing and recovering from the natural disease. Still, the World Health Organization is partnering with the government, health officials, multinational pharmaceutical corporations, and medical trade groups in a global measles eradication campaign after the smallpox and polio eradication campaigns of the 20th century. The goal is to eradicate measles and rubella from the earth at the latest by 2020. In order to accomplish that goal in the next 6 years, the plan is to make sure that at least 95% or more of the world's 2 billion children get 2 doses of MMR vaccine, with a dose of MMR vaccine costing the CDC $20 to purchase from Merck, while private pediatricians pay $56 a dose. The cost waging of global measles eradication campaign is astronomical and likely to be a complete failure. Dr. Poland wrote, eradication, complete elimination of the global spread of transmission of measles is unlikely, as modeling studies suggest that herd immunity of approximately 95% or greater is required to eliminate persisting measles endemicity. Because field studies demonstrated evidence of primary vaccine failure and population levels of immunity below this threshold, the U.S., like many other countries, adopted a two-dose measles vaccination policy in the early 1990s. However, even the 2 documented doses of measles vaccines, our laboratory demonstrated that 8.9% of 763 healthy individuals immunized a mean of 7.4 years earlier lacked protective levels of circulating measles-specific neutralizing antibodies, suggesting that even 2 doses of the current measles vaccine may be insufficient at the population level. So if you're on the fence, let me digress from the article for a second. If you're on the fence about vaccines, or you're pro-vaccination, What do you do with this information? Knowing that there's, you know, if one out of 10 of you, if you have 10 pro-vaccination people in a room, that at least one of you is not going to be protected after getting the vaccine. And you're still at risk for the side effects. Pro-vaccination people, how do you respond to that? Is that okay with you? Are you okay knowing that you're getting injected with these fetal bovine serum and human DNA mediums, along with heavy metals and formaldehyde and MSG? And there is a least a chance that one out of 10 of you in the room is not going to be protected from this. You okay with that? How does that make you feel? I'm not asking facetiously. I'm really curious. So continuing with the article, families continue to report vaccine nightmares. Most physicians don't know or share this information with their patients. A documented serious side effect of vaccination, including smallpox, rabies, pertussis, and MMR vaccine, for the rabies vaccine, okay, is encephalitis, inflammation of the brain, which can lead to permanent brain damage. In 2012, the Italian Health Ministry conceded that the MMR vaccine caused autism in a now 11-year-old boy. The judge ruled the boy had been damaged by irreversible complications due to the vaccination. Serious, permanent, and sometimes fatal reactions can and do occur with more frequency than you might think. In 2014, Today Australia reported one family's vaccination nightmare in which a new father was told he had to get a shot containing B. pertussis, whooping cough vaccine, in order to visit his newborn son in the hospital nursery. He complied and suffered a rare reaction, left him partially paralyzed and near death. Also this year, the parents of Saba Button reached a settlement with an influenza vaccine manufacturer and the Australian government after it had ruled that their daughter suffered permanent brain damage and organ damage after getting the Fluvax shot when she was 11 months old. The settlement, which is reported to be worth millions of dollars, will help pay for her care, but cannot ever restore her health. In his judgment, the judge said Saba suffered hypoxic brain injury as a result of an influenza vaccination that significantly shortened her lifespan and left her with profound and permanent disabilities that will require constant care for the rest of her life. And in the U.S., yet another family is reporting serious reactions to the Gardasil HPV vaccine and their two children, who received it at ages 14 and 17. Both teens experienced violent seizures about 3 months after receiving the shot. Merck's product lists seizures as one of the serious adverse events that have been reported after the receipt of Gardasil. Such reports receive barely a passing mention in the press, leaving many parents in the dark about the reported risk of these vaccinations. Pediatrician highlights lack of safety studies proving vaccine safety. Many are also under the mistaken impression that appropriate safety studies have been conducted, which is not the case. There are biological, genetic, and environmental differences among us, and that is why some of us get an MMR shot or experience measles and do not suffer complications, while others do suffer complications and are brain injured or die. Doctors cannot predict ahead of time who will be harmed by a vaccine or an infectious disease, and they cannot guarantee that those who've been vaccinated are incapable of being infected or transmitting infection, points that are not being shared with parents in the decision-making process regarding vaccination. Even the studies that have been done are not nearly long enough to show what long-term implications of vaccinations might be. As board-certified pediatrician Dr. Lawrence Pilewski said, they are not following children long enough to know whether in 3 months, 6 months, 3 years, 6 years, or 10 years, there could be some autoimmune antibody or some immune challenge that happens to the body that lingers or that just sits there as a genotypic effect. There's a change in the genetics. There's a change in the DNA that doesn't necessarily manifest until years later because of one of the stressors, perhaps even from another vaccine that comes years later. None of those studies have been done, so I don't know how you can say that vaccines are safe. We're not looking at micromolecular levels to see, okay, was there an autoimmune antibody produced? Were there other inflammatory markers produced? Where do those markers manifest? Do they stay in the body? Do they stay in clinical symptoms? Do they manifest in the clinical symptoms? Are they relevant? None of the science is being done, but we're just saying that vaccines are safe because we've been doing it for so long. And anyone with a good scientific mind would say that that is not adequate. Protect your rights to informed consent and defend vaccine exemptions. With all the uncertainty surrounding the safety of vaccines, it's critical to protect your right to make independent health choices and exercise voluntarily informed consent to vaccination. It is urgent that everyone in America stand up and fight to protect and expand vaccine-informed consent protections in public health and employment laws. The best way to do this is to get personally involved with your state legislators and educating the leaders in your community. Think globally, act locally. And there's a lot more to this article. If you've never been to Mercola.com, Dr. Mercola really over-delivers with his with the information. All right, let's do one more. Because I have about, like I said, I have about six articles here. We're going to do one more on vaccines and move on the topic. Another insight here. This article is also on naturalnews.com. Going against the mainstream assessment that it must have been the anti-vaxxers that caused the vaccine outbreak. So this is from January 13th from Jonathan Benson, staff writer for Natural News. CDC lies, measles outbreaks confirmed among children already vaccinated. Maybe Mickey Mouse is responsible for spreading measles to children at Disneyland. This is a more likely hypothesis than the health department claims that unvaccinated children are to blame for recent outbreaks at the happiest place on earth, in which 39 people and counting from at least four states, according to the latest reports, have been confirmed as having contracted the disease while visiting the park. Official reports are claiming that unvaccinated children are to blame because some of those who contracted the measles hadn't been vaccinated. Some of them had been vaccinated. Of course, the original source of the disease has yet to been determined. But like always, it is automatically those pesky individuals who choose not to inject their bodies with a vaccine linked to brain damage and autism, and that's been shown to spread measles, that must have triggered the outbreak. The interesting thing about the latest measles outbreak is that the media is parading it around as evidence that not getting vaccinated triggers disease outbreaks, even though the original source of disease is unknown. It is entirely possible that the unvaccinated person spread the disease to both vaccinated and unvaccinated people, and which in of itself shows the lack of effectiveness of vaccines. If the vaccine for measles in the U.S., this vaccine is a combination of measles, mumps, rubella injection, really did work as claimed, and all measles cases identified at Disneyland would have been from unvaccinated people, but they weren't. Early on, media reports claimed that most of the cases were in unvaccinated people. More recent reports are saying that some of the people were unvaccinated. MMR vaccines can trigger a typical measles, potentially triggering measles outbreak. As you may already been aware, most previous measles outbreaks have occurred among mostly unvaccinated populations, for which health officials have no explanation other than to, again, blame the unvaccinated, which makes no sense. Many measles vaccinated individuals have also come down with what's known as atypical measles infection later in life, the direct result of having gotten vaccinated. In a paper published back in 1979, atypical measles infection was described as a sensitivity response to a natural measles infection due to having been previously injected with an inactivated measles virus. A measles epidemic that occurred several years prior in Northern California exhibited all signs of atypical measles caused by vaccination. In typical measles, a rash occurs the first at the hairline, progresses it's concentrated on the face and trunk and is often accompanied by copulic spots, explains the study as reported by the International Medical Council on Vaccination. In atypical measles, the rash is morphologically a mixture of maculopapular, petechial, excuse me for butchering these words that are new to me, vesicular and ureteral components. It usually begins and is concentrated primarily on the extremities. It progresses self-allied and not accompanied by Koblik spots. Without going into too many details, the point here is that the measles vaccination population was responsible for this particular outbreak, and like many others, and yet the mainstream media is making no mention of AMS in its reports, instead choosing to perpetrate the lie that unvaccinated people are always the cause of disease outbreaks. While they may be the cause in some cases, they are most likely not in most of them. As we reported back in 2011, the Institute of Medicine even admitted in a report claiming MMR vaccines don't cause autism, that the vaccines can in fact cause measles. On page 574, in fact, the report claims evidence convincingly supports the notion that MMR vaccines cause measles. I mean, they give you the measles virus. Of course it causes measles. Welcome to crazy town, people. And this whole vaccination thing is just weird, cultish-like. And it's, you know, if you really think about it, it's really frightening. These control freak weirdos want to inject everyone with vaccines when they clearly don't work for everyone. There was 100% compliance in vaccines. There's no guarantee that it would stop the disease, and it may even spread the disease more. And time again, you see vaccine outbreaks were caused by... disease outbreaks that are often in people that were vaccinated for those disease. But let's move on. A couple other topics before we wrap up for today. Here's a kind of weird article, which by reading the headlines, there's been several reports of this, but by reading the headlines, it's a little, I don't want to say misleading. Let's just get to the article. MotherJones.com. Scientists just found a way to make GMOs much safer. Biotech researchers think they found a way to keep modified genes from escaping into other organisms. It's the worst nightmare of activists opposed to genetically modified crops. An errant GMO seed blows out of a wheat or a cornfield and breeds with a species in the wild or a neighboring farm. The modified gene proliferates and spreads through the population, and pretty soon the line between engineered crops and their natural counterparts begins to disappear, with an unpredictable consequences for the ecosystem. This happened in 2012 in North Dakota when scientists discovered that genes from genetically engineered canola grown commercially oil across the state were appearing in every sample of canola taken in the wild. In that case, the escape of GMOs turned out to be no big deal. According to who, Mother Jones? But it raised eyebrows with plant scientists about how quickly modified genes can spread. Some warn that plants engineered to be especially hardy, for example, the drought and heat-tolerant plants that agribusiness giants like Monsanto are pushing as a remedy to climate change could drive out native breeds, taking with them a precious store of genetic diversity. This will be the barrier unlike any that has existed in the kingdoms of life. Since the late 1970s, when genetically engineered crops began to arrive in the U.S., federal and state agencies have applied a smattering of rules and regulations to prevent this from happening. But on Wednesday, a pair of new studies published in Nature offered for the first time a protection that comes straight from an organism's DNA. After several years of painstaking research, bioengineers at Yale and Harvard have developed a method to ensure organisms with engineered DNA could survive only in designated environments and not in the wild. The research was on bacteria E. coli, but the scientists said the same basic steps could be applied to genetically modified crops, as well as bacteria used to process dairy, products, probiotics for health applications, and even microorganisms used to clean up oil spills. Okay, now, this, stop right there. Like, first of all, what does this say about GMO crops when scientists have to work on a method to make them not cross-contaminate with non-GMO crops? Number one. Number two, does this not raise a red flag for health implications? What does that got to say about your food when it has to be, it's already engineered, then it has to be engineered not to bio-rape the farm across the street? And really, too, this, like when I said the headline seemed misleading, when they say scientists just found a way to make GMOs much safer, people automatically, when they hear GMOs, are thinking, oh, corn, soy, canola, alfalfa. But it's talking about genetically modifying E. coli. But again, they say it could be applied to the same methods that, or the same methods could be applied to these GMO food crops. Geneticist Farron Isaacs, co-author of the Yale study, says endowing safeguards is now important to allow the field of biotechnology to go forward. To understand how the proposed solution works, let's back up to a few basics of genetics. Everything about an organism, its color, how it reproduces or digests food, basically any trait you can think of is encoded with DNA, a long sequence of base molecules represented by letters A, T, C, and G. Stretches of this code are called genes. The entire thing is a genome. The basis makeup of a blueprint that tells us how a cell, that tells a cell how to arrange amino acids taking from the environment into functional proteins that are taking building blocks of life. Every three bases along the chain code for a specific amino acid, of which there are 20. One of the coolest things about biology is that those same 20 amino acids dictated by the same code are used by every living thing, from bacteria to apple trees to humans. What Isaacs and his colleagues managed to do was recode an E. coli genome so that it could make use of a special 21st amino acid that was synthetically produced in the lab. Then they went a step further by planting the code for the acid inside genes that are essential to the bacteria's basic life functions. When the bacteria is moved to the petri dish without the synthetic amino acid, it dies. The method could give biotech researchers an unprecedented level of control over genetic modifications. So let's back up there. There's a specific chain code of 20 amino acids that are used for every living thing, as the article states, for bacteria to apple trees to humans. So they want to give a 21st synthetic version to the genetically modified food that Americans and others around the world are eating, thinking that's going to be a good idea. All right, let's be open-minded. Let's continue the article. We do consider this a new class of organism, said George Church, a Harvard geneticist who co-authored one of the papers. This will be a barrier unlike any that has existed in the kingdoms of life. The implication is that when an organism genes are modified for a specific function to increase corn yield, for example, those same genes could also be outfitted with the custom recoding to make them dependent on a steady supply of synthetic amino acid that can be procured in the wild. In the case of crops, that could be a supply through a custom fertilizer, a concept that is similar to how existing GMO crops are engineered to work in tandem with certain herbicides. If one of those seeds found its way into the wild, it wouldn't survive without the synthetic amino acid. Basically, it's a drug addict that relies on a certain drug to function. Nah, that's probably not the best comparison. But again, the headline. Scientists found a way to make GMOs much safer. That Tim McDonald, I don't know this author, but that's a very stupid and irresponsible headline, because adding a synthetic 21st amino acid is not proving that GMOs are safer. They did not find a way to prove that GMOs are safer, Tim McDonald of MotherJones.com, because who knows what implications a synthetic amino acid in the food supply. So, I don't feel the need to go any further with this article. Let's just not eat GMOs, okay? Can we do that? Can we stop growing them? Stop approving them? Think labeling is a killer solution, which it isn't. It's barely progress. Can we do that? Can we pretend like it's not hard to avoid GMOs? Like it doesn't take a little effort and a little research? Can we do that as well? It's not hard, people. People look at me as like some GMO expert. He's an expert. First of all, I'm not an expert on GMOs. I'm very well, very well educated on how to avoid them, but I am no smarter than anyone else. I just did the research. Get ready for my expertise research, people. This is what I did. I pick up food. I will look at the label and say, oh, I don't know what that ingredient is, and type that ingredient into a search engine, which would find out its original source. That is what qualifies as an expert. Oh, citric acid. I don't know what citric acid comes from. Let's do a quick search on the internet. Citric acid comes from corn. That took 15 seconds. And that, my friends, is what is considered expertise. I appreciate the compliment, but how about we start complimenting ourselves? Realize that no one is smarter than you. No one has the ability to do more research than you. Stop giving our power away. Stop giving your power away. Let's talk about bowel movements. Because even in the health world, alternative, mainstream, or otherwise, I find it's still kind of taboo. No one wants to talk about taking dumps. It is weird to talk about. You know, I find as healthy as I am, you know, I still have days of constipation, and I still have days of, you know, only having maybe one bowel movement. So, you know, I'm working on detoxification methods through fasting, and I'll be trying castor oil. I've tried supplements that just haven't worked for me. I may be anatomically incorrect. I haven't got that tested yet, but that's what I'm going with. but when you are having them, you can look at them. And there's four ways to easily tell what your poop, and I hate that word, I don't know why, but what it says about your health. Another article from naturalnews.com. And like I said, they say too, it's not something discussed in most social circles, but one of the most important topics when it comes down to you being able to evaluate your health is your bowel movements. The frequency, form, fumes, color, all you need to evaluate your stool and be able to to make a reasonable assessment of how different areas of your body are functioning. So if you're ready to get down and dirty with your bowel movements, be sure to use this handy guide to measure your results. Frequency. There's no doubt that consistently moving your bowels is important, and anyone who has been constipated would certainly agree that infrequent bowel movements are, well, a pain in the ass. However, those who tend to go multiple times a day may have the same may say that sometimes more is not better. In the end, the answer lies somewhere in between with some pertinent details. The gold standard would be to have 2 to 3 complete and fully formed bowel movements a day. This means you feel like your bowels are completely emptied each time, and your feces are a type 3 or 4, which we'll have more information on that below. This is very difficult for most people to achieve, as their diet and inner ecology needs to be nearly impeccable for this to occur. The generally approved standard would be 1 complete and fully formed bowel movement a day. This would indicate that your diet and digestion are in good working order. Anything less than this would indicate some level of constipation, which eventually causes many chronic health conditions. It is also important to note that going 4 or more times a day is not typically healthy, as it is often indicates an overactive digestive system that is constantly attempting to rid itself of toxins. The only time this may be considered normal is when a detoxification or cleansing protocol is in effect. Form. To get the proper form, our digestive system needs to be efficiently broken down and assimilating nutrients, and waste needs to be passing through our system in a reasonable time frame. Too short of a time frame and you have diarrhea, too long and you become constipated. There are 7 types of bowel movements, and they can be described as follows. Type 1, separate hard lumps, like nuts, hard to pass. Type 2, sausage shape, but not lumpy. Type 3, like a sausage, but cracks on the surface. Type 4, like a sausage or snake, smooth and soft. Type 5, soft blobs with clear cut edges, easy to pass. Type 6, fluffy pieces with ragged edges, mushy. Type 7, watery, no solid pieces. You should consistently be achieving type 3 or 4. Anything else that is routinely passed 2 or 3 times a week or more is indicative of digestive disturbances. Fumes. If your stool has extraordinarily bad odor, you should not ignore it. This could be an indication of a number of digestive problems such as candida, celiac, and Crohn's, as well as other digestive support system problems such as pancreatic and liver disease. The bottom line is the stool will have a smell, but if it nauseates you or others, it's a problem. Color. The color of your poo, believe it or not, matters. An optimal stool is a nice medium to dark brown color, like what you might see in milk chocolate. It is black. If it is black, it could be a sign of blood in the upper GI tract. If it is yellow or green, it could be a result of fat, malabsorption, or liver or gallbladder stress. Certain foods can change the color of your stool, such as dark greens and beets, and is not typically a concern. Let me say this, and I'll quickly finish the article as we're wrapping up. If you drink beet juice, you will think you're bleeding out of your ass. You're not. Beet juice is just indigestible, and it will come out in your urine and your bowel movements. So if you drink beet juice and think you are having rectal bleeding, you're not. So don't panic. Telling you from experience. Other considerations. There are debates as to whether floaters or sinkers are best, but the overall consensus seems to be that sinkers are better. You will want to note any undigested food particles in your poop, which is a sign of incomplete digestion. And other things you may want to note is excessive mucus or stools in your stools. This is another sign of digestive problems, possibly related to IBS, candida, and other parasite infections. In the end, your poo says a lot about your health, and more specifically, your digestion. For a handy chart on proper and poor-looking poop, along with some of the other top ways to fix any problems, visit 4 Reasons Your Digestion is Ruined and What You Can Do About It, and Balance Your Ecosystem. And we will do links. Link to the magazine so you can go to those articles. And that is it, my friends. I am wrapping up. This is Nick Brandigan signing off for Health Conspiracy Radio. Back again live tomorrow, 5 a.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I love you all. Until tomorrow.